Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
It's a great honour to introduce to you our next very special guest on Open House. Mother Agnes Miriam of the Cross is a Carmelite nun and founder of the Order of Antioch at the Monastery of St. James the Mutilated in Syria. And that title also points starkly to the modern-day mutilation and turmoil of her homeland, where war and terrorism has brought untold misery over these past 2 years. The United Nations estimates that 80,000 lives have been lost, 20,000 so far this year. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights puts it at 94,000, possibly as high as 120,000. Mother Agnes Miriam has been forced to flee her homeland, though she's courageously faced down many threats, bombs, armed gangs, terrorists. The turning point came when rebels sent this message to her: "Don't ever think to come back to the monastery because you will not be alive." Our conversation tonight is all the more relevant considering the decision just taken this weekend by the United States to cross a significant line and authorise the sending of arms to some rebel groups in Syria. Mother Agnes has lived one crowded life, from her days travelling a hippie trail in the 60s to Lebanon because it had the best cannabis, where she encountered, as she puts it, the liberation of Jesus Christ. Her life was never the same again. It's my privilege to say, Mother Agnes Miriam, welcome to Open House.
Thank you very much. I am happy to be here
it's
with you.
Great treat to meet you. Please. Can we begin with this announcement this weekend from the White House about supporting some of the rebel groups? This is a very significant line that's been crossed.
Yes, we are deceived with President Obama because we thought that he really wanted to open a new path toward the peace and pacification with the Russians. And we were preparing by prayer, of course, but also ideology, or if you want, this philosophy of reconciliation in Syria, as paving the way for Geneva II. With this new decision, Geneva II is buried, maybe. And we are on the way for a new escalation, more death, more innocent people displaced, more catastrophe. And for us, it's a real deception.
Although the United States says it's taken this action because of the use of chemical weapons in Damascus, in the northern city of Aleppo.
It's pretext, you know, it's déjà vu. The déjà vu, we have seen it in Kosovo, we have seen it in Iraq. It's virtual threats. We have seen it in Libya, a false threat, a counterfeit threat that will be used to bypass the international laws. Nowadays, nobody, you know, is idiot enough to believe in this threat. All the contrary, we have very sure proofs that the rebels are the one who have used the chemical weapons. Until today, nobody have among the big powers have taken any measure to stop them.
You bring with you a very different perspective to the war and the turmoil in Syria, different to much of what we see and hear in the media. From what you've seen and experienced, you say much of the trouble stems not from the Syrians, not even from President Assad's forces, but from people who've come to your country from outside to fight.
During many months, we have seen a faceless threat coming from gangs that were unidentified. And slowly by slowly, those gangs were identified by international medias and then also by ourselves. Those people have been working hard on the ground to spread chaos, to spread death. They were like death squad to also execute a kind of demographical redistribution to stop the social, the civilian life. This was not done by Syrian. It was maybe covered by innocent Syrian who would only think about a kind of reform or a kind of revolution, but not through those methods. Now, Syrian people are more aware. We foresee that in the very near future, there will be a kind of alliance between Syrians and Syrians. and to push away those strangers.
Where have these people come from the outside, and why have they come to Syria?
For a while, we saw they were coming from 29 countries, now raising from 29 to 40 countries. After the Battle of Qusair, it's 80 countries. They come from 80 countries. It is documented. They are encouraged to come. Someone is really pushing with money. Some of them, they think that they are coming to make a war against Israel. They think that they are coming to Israel for a holy war. They form a kind of 90% of the overall forces. And we have been talking with Syrian rebels that have decided to split from a violent opposition to a political opposition. They used to work with those strangers, but they felt that those strangers were despising them. They wouldn't respect them. They would just consider them as impious because you, Syrian, you form a kind of Islam which is not the pure and the radical one. The Syrian jihadists are despised by the foreign jihadists. That's why I say that in Syria there is a new shift in this war, and Syrians are getting more and more to come together and make a kind of alliance.
Tell us about the Christian population in Syria. There are about 2 million of them, 10% of the population. How are they placed amidst all of this turmoil?
The Christians are unlike of the other confessions. Christian did not have any precautions considering aggression against their villages, against their cities. And so we had very quickly massive displacement and in various places in Syria from the Christian component. It began in Homs after the so-called liberation of the Christian historical center of Homs. More than 100,000 of Christians were displaced in the beginning of the year 2012. And after this, we had many, many other places that lived the same liberation. In fact, it was liberating the region from its inhabitants. Until today, they are surrounded and they live a very precarious way of life. And we will not forget the region in the province of Homs, where in the west skirt of this province, you had villages like Qusair. The biggest Greek Catholic village in Syria has been completely evacuated by its Christian component, incurring also in massacres and in raping. I know a terrible case of collective rape for a woman, which became legendary. Even in the capital, in Damascus, Christian areas, Christian streets are the target, continuous target of mortar shelling. And so it creates a kind of precarity, and it pushes people to leave.
What's the future of the Christian community amidst this?
It's very dark. Yeah. To tell you the truth, it's very dark because the international community is giving a big coverage, mediatic coverage, to those foreigners. From one side, the United States and the international community, they call Jabhat al-Nusra and Al-Qaeda terrorist group. But on the other side, they are arming them and they are financing them and they are all the time covering, you know, with silence their crime and their massacres. Those people enjoy impunity. There is no accountability that is laying upon their head. They have a job, you know. They have a job to create the most possible chaos and the most great destruction of the Syrian infrastructure. They want to destroy the state. It's not a matter only of toppling a regime. The aim, what we see, is to completely destroy Syria and, what is maybe more serious, to dismantle the very precious, the very rich a social tissue of the Syrian society to tear it off and on the following confessional and ethnical lines of confrontation. And this is really, you know, Machiavellic.
It must have been a terribly big decision for you to leave, to go into exile.
I am always trying to go but to come back, but it will threaten my own community. I have in this monastery of Saint James the Mutilated, 90 kilometers north of Damascus, there is a community. We are 20 people of various nationalities. We are 8 nationalities, and we have also with us 20 refugees from Qusair, Sunni refugees from Qusair. So those 40 people would be threatened if I come to live with them. So I must stay until the establishment of a new situation of security. I have to remain far from them. It's a big challenge for me, and it's a sacrifice.
Yes, I'm sure. Mm. Amidst all of this, you say you've never lost faith in God.
Oh, no, of course not. Of course not. You know, we read sorrowfully the Holy Scriptures, and we believe in the eschatology. And so we can read the signs of time, the signs that the Lord is nearer than before. This makes us, in the midst of such challenges, raise our head and be more faithful and more hopeful in the Lord.
Can you tell us about that time when you embraced Christian faith? You were on that hippie train in 1960s.
Yes, the Lord, he doesn't see the exterior. He sees the interior of each one of us. He feels our desires. He feels our expectation. He knows when we are shouting for him. And so the Lord, I think, now that I can look backward and read in my own story, I think that since the beginning, trying to flee from the society and from maybe the hypocrisy I felt around me, I was searching my Lord. And he came to me where I was searching for him, you know, in my very humanity, in my very extravagance. The hippie life is something very original. But we were poor people. We were children just trying to find a way in a life which became very artificial and prefabricated.
And you found that word liberation in Jesus Christ.
I found everything in my Lord. I found myself, first of all, because when I had this experience, it was to see myself in his own light, because he created us to his likeness, to his image. And we are created by love to remain eternally with him. He gives us freely from his glory. This glory, when I could experience it, was more beautiful than anything else.
And has sustained you through all this strife in this day and age.
Until today.
One of your nuns from your monastery spoke about your life like this: Jesus is not just a word. We live with him every minute. We live with the reality of God.
Yes, he is a living God. He is the living God, the one who was, who is, and who is to come. And he gives a sense to my life. He is the sense of my life. He is the Alpha, the Omega. To live with Jesus is a kind of experiencing a revival, because with his Spirit, he enters in ourselves. And he transforms us from inside. And it's a new life of hope, of joy, in the midst of the cross. It's a great experience. I thank him because he is, and because he made himself more and more known by ourselves.
I'm sure you've reflected on how and why all this strife that's playing out in Syria and in the region, how it's played out over generations. It's played out also in the region where Jesus lived.
You know, this region is like the center, the heart of the earth. It's a cradle of civilization. We would like that this region become like a natural reserve of spirituality, natural reserve of humanity. a region without arms, without conflict. And it's all the contrary. It's a region which brings always, since many years, a lot of disasters. You know, my father is a Palestinian, and so we lived the displacement of my father. Then we lived the Iranian revolution. Then we lived the Iraqi and Iranian war. Then we lived the Gulf War. Then we lived Afghanistan war. And then the Arabic Spring, you know, which is not a spring, but a winter and a hell. Instead of spreading, peace and conviviality, the international community is just spreading its own discrepancies, and it's too much disasters. So we say it's enough.
How do you see the future then?
There must be a shift from politics to ethics. It's enough politics. It's enough politics without ethics. It's the time for a new era of self-control of the international community, where power cannot do whatever we want.
Mother Agnes, if there are people listening who would like to help in this cause, help the Christian community in particular in Syria, what can they do? Where can they go?
Well, there is, of course, a lot of NGOs. We are, as the Monastery of St. James the Mutilated, we have many partners and we have many projects. One of these projects to bring mobile hospitals to Syria, because those rebels, they have destroyed more than 60 hospitals. Second, we need medicines. And we have our partners here in Australia together. The medicine that are needed in Syria, because the factories, pharmaceutical factories, have been also destroyed. And on an everyday basis inside Syria, you have more than 5 million of people that are displaced. It means that they have lost everything. They have lost their houses. If we follow what the Human Rights High Office, it's the biggest tragedy since the World War II. Those people, they need to eat.
So are there websites that people can head to find out more information?
Yes. You have Australians for Reconciliation in Syria, in one word, .wordpress.com. And for the Syrian Relief Fund, the website is SyrianReliefFund.org. And any donation is tax deductible here in Australia.
Well, we'll put the details up on our Open House Community Facebook page.
Thank you very much.
Mother Agnes, it's a great privilege meeting you.
Please.
I'm so glad that you've joined us on Open House. Thank you so much.
I'm happy to be with you. God bless.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.